Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Heidelberg Cement Interim Financial Report, January to September 2019 conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask questions during the session, you need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, 7th of November, 2019. I would like to hand the conference over to our first speaker today. Christoph, please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Heidelberg Cement's Q3 call, earnings call. Thanks for joining us a little earlier today than in our previous calls. This is due to the schedule we have today, meeting investors in London. As usual, we have Dr. Scheifele and Dr. Näger as our speakers today. They will both guide us through the presentation. Also in the room, we have Dr. von Achten, our Deputy CEO, and the IR team with Ozan and Piotr. With that little introduction, I hand over to you, Dr. Scheifele.
Okay, Mr. Bauer, thanks a lot. Hello, good morning here from London. Thanks a lot for joining us for our Q3 call. As usual, I'll lead you through the operational results, and Dr. Näger will concentrate on the financial report. I start with the overview on chart three. If you look to Q3, what are the key issues? I think the company continues to grow. Top-line growth of Heidelberg is strong. That is good. Operational result is up. If you look to the regions, obviously, it's a little bit a mixed picture. I think we have done very well in Western Southern Europe. We have done a good job in Northern Europe and Eastern Europe. Also Asia was good. Africa, clearly improving, and we were a little bit short in North America for good reasons, and I will explain that. For us, important is that the quality of earnings has clearly improved and continues to improve. Our cash conversion is significantly up versus last year. The operating cash flow has went significantly up, and that's why we have upgraded our net debt target before IFRS 16, that we come down to a level of about 7.4. So the company is well on track to reach its targets, which we announced at the last Capital Market Day, that we wanna get our net debt level by 2020 and 2020 down to 7 billion. We are clearly, in that respect, ahead of our schedule. If you look then to chart four, that shows you the key messages also on the disposals. We are on our way. We have reached about 400 million in Q3. We sold off two cement plants in Italy to Buzzi, and also we sold one of the cement line business in Germany. And we're gonna continue with the disposal strategy in Q4 and also next year. Chart five gives you the overall overview on our key numbers, and maybe I spend shortly a little bit time on the volumes, because that gives you then also finally the results. If you look to cement volume, what you see in absolute numbers, our volumes are down by about 2.7 million tons per September versus last year. And the question is: where does that come from? That is very simple. About 900,000 tons comes from disposals. As you know, we have sold our Ukraine business, and we have also sold cement plants in Italy. That, in total, for September, is about 900,000 tons. Then in Europe, we stopped exporting in Europe, mainly from Spain and Northern Europe, which is a loss of about 500,000 tons. We stopped exports due to the CO2 pricing. Another key issue is Egypt. As you all know, in Egypt, the market is negative this year for September, about -6%. Our volumes are down by about 700,000 tons. And then in Asia, we are down by more than 1 million tons, mainly in two countries. First of all, India, the market was weak due to the election campaign, heavy rain. We focus clearly on price increases, especially in the region south. Our prices in India are up more than 10%. So in India, we lost about 700,000 tons volume, and the other one is Indonesia, where the market was also per September still negative and where our volumes are down by about 300,000 tons. If you look to the second business line, aggregates, you see here in aggregates, the volumes are more or less flattish. We talk about a difference of about maybe 350,000 tons. What is that? Here in the, if you look to the big aggregates countries of Heidelberg, we talk about four countries. Two are down, one is up, one is flat. Flat is UK. US is up by about 3.5 million tons. Australia is down due to the drop in residential in Sydney and in Brisbane, especially by about 2.2 million tons. And also Canada, Western Canada, is down due to the downturn in the Prairie provinces by about 1.2 million tons. And the rest is more or less a washout. Okay, and then you see group share profit is down. That has to do with the sale of our Ukraine business, which triggered a loss mainly accounting driven due to IFRS of about 140 million euro. That is the main item. The profit bridges of chart 6 and 7, I think they are more or less self-explanatory. You see that prices, especially if you look to chart 7, are clearly up. Here you see prices, especially in Europe, are up by and large between 5 to 15%. That you see the clear impact of the increased CO2 price, which is now reflected also in the prices in the market. All European countries have more or less increased prices quite significantly. Chart 8 shows you the profit bridge for Q3, and you see that for us the comparison base was, especially in North America, a difficult one, because in North America there was included last year the sale of a quarry, of an exhausted quarry with about 25 million, and in the Nordics we have sold land in our Kunda plant, which we are about to close now in Q1 2020. That's the wet plant in Estonia, and that was about 15 million euro. Energy is down. You see that from chart 9. That shows you the energy bill of our cement division. Yeah, we have two different developments. Coal and petcoke are clearly down, whereas electricity is up. And and in between, we still have a positive reduction of about 29 million. We expect this trend to continue in Q4, because we are using in Q4 now the coal and petcoke, which we have typically bought in May until July, August, and we made purchases at a very low level. Then on CO2, obviously a key issue now for the industry, you see on chart 10 our reduction target on the CO2 emissions per ton of clinker. What's the message? As you know, we are part of the European trading scheme, and the current trading period ends 2020. By the end of that period, Heidelberg will be long, roughly around close to 5 million tons, and we are covered until 2020, mid or end, 22, mid or end 22. And we have set up now a master plan for CO2 reduction per plant level with very detailed measures, clear responsibility, and have incentivized plant management, country management, and also the board to get CO2 emissions down after 2022, with a target that the allocations which we will get in the next trading period are sufficient to cover our CO2 emissions, so that we do not have to buy additional certificates. We think we are well on track with that target. We concentrate mainly on three areas: increase of alternative fuel rate, decrease of clinker content. There we had stagnation, especially in Europe over the last years. We can do better. And thirdly, that we use more and more carbon-free raw material in order to avoid process emissions in the kiln. Chart 11 shows you the price of the CO2 price, the development. Yeah, we think we will benefit from that development because we are long until 2022. Some competitors are already short nowadays, others run out earlier. And secondly, what we see is that pricing, especially in Europe, is clearly influenced by the rising CO2 price. And furthermore, we expect capacity consolidation. If we go now to the areas, let's look to chart 13. If you look to chart 13 on the volumes in North America, you see volume was growing slightly. For us, we had two areas which went well with good growth rates around 5%. That's our region North and South, South especially Texas, Alabama, Florida, whereas Canada, Western Canada, and especially also California were very weak, yeah? Especially California, the cement market is for the first 9 months, I think, down 8%. Western Canada is also down at least 3 to 5%. And that led overall to a small increase. If you look now, to the operational result, yeah, you see that the result is like for like down, and that has mainly three reasons. Canada, which is for us a very profitable region with very high margins, volumes were clearly weaker. Yeah, and there the result is clearly negative. The same applies to the region West, California. The result is clearly down, whereas the result is up, mainly in the region North and slightly down in the South, but that it has more to do with production scheduling, which we will recoup by inventory gains in Q4. So the main message is Canada was weak. Market is weak in the Prairie provinces. California was weak. And if you look to the volumes, yeah, you see the volumes are up 6.5%, and then the result is down. What's the problem? The problem is that the mix of our business has changed. We lost business and volumes in markets with high margins, like especially in Western Canada, whereas the growth was typically in the south of the U.S. and in the north, where the margin are smaller, and in the south also partially the cement sales are covered by imports, yeah, into Florida, where obviously the margin is significantly lower than on our cement sales in Edmonton or Calgary. So the mix effect plays quite a significant role. If you look to margin on aggregates, you see very clearly last year the margin was obviously influenced by a land sale, 43.2%. This year we are at 35.4%, which is still a very good one. And that explains the numbers. We go to Western and Southern Europe. That's the chart 14. Let's first look a little bit on the volumes. If you look to cement, you see volumes are slightly down. What's the reason? One is export stop in Spain from our Malagan plant. That's about 300,000 tons. And secondly, we sold in Italy cement plants, especially to Buzzi, which is about 400,000 tons. And then you see that the other markets were all positive. From a result point of view, result is significantly up. All countries except UK have done clearly better. Germany is clearly up. Italy is clearly up. France is clearly better. Bene is better. All countries by relatively solid volume growth, yeah, especially France was good with more than 4%. But pricing in all countries was strong and energy costs were flattish or down. And the only problem, UK was a little bit down by 1 million against last year. But all the countries are have been okay. And that what you see also in the cement margin went up close to 5 percent points. There you see the clear impact of pricing. If you look to Northern and Eastern Europe, let's first have a look on the volumes. You see the cement volumes are also down by close to 700,000 tons. What is the reason? First of all, deconsolidation of Ukraine is about 500,000 tons. And then we stopped also in Sweden, we stopped exports to exports due to CO2 costs, which is about 200,000 tons. Then we lost also volumes in the Polish market. The market was relatively flattish all week. A main reason is that we have led a price increase in Poland this year of about 15% and have had a clear pricing first policy, which has cost us some volumes. The other markets in Eastern Europe are very strong. Romania is good, Czech Republic is good, Hungary is good, Kazakhstan is good, even Russia is coming back. If you look to the result, EBITDA is slightly down, but that is explained by the missing sale of land in Kunda last year, which had an impact of about 15 million. If you take that, then it's overall flattish on a high level. We had a market weakness, or we have a market weakness in Norway and in Sweden. In Norway, it's mainly the big project, the big tunnel project in Oslo, has finished, and we are getting new work, big infrastructure, turnpike project in Oslo next year. In Sweden, residential is weak, and that, let's say that slowdown on result in the Nordics is compensated by clear result improvements in Eastern Europe. If you look Asia Pacific, let's look to the volumes, chart 16 also. You see volumes are down close to 700,000 tons. That has mainly to do with two countries. As I mentioned earlier, India is down and also Indonesia is down. Both countries, we had elections, yeah. Whereas the volumes, for example, in China are okay, and Thailand is close to be flattish. If we look to the results, and you see, results are up in Asia, yeah, and we have one country where results are clearly down. That's Australia. In Australia, the residential sector, especially in Brisbane, but mainly also in Sydney, is clearly negative with volume growth of -15%. That has impacted the results negatively, whereas we have a significant result improvement, especially in Indonesia. If you look to the first nine months, yeah, our results in euro terms in Indonesia have more than doubled, yeah. Very clear pricing is up 10%. India is also clearly up, pricing up 10%. China is strong, and also Thailand has a very strong recovery. All this more than overcompensates the market weakness in Australia. If we go to East Africa, Eastern Mediterranean, also here you see the cement volumes are slightly down. That's driven by the Egyptian market, which is weak, and also Ghana, the market is down 5%. Both markets, we are in total down by about 1 million tons, whereas the other markets, especially Togo, but also Benin, Burkina Faso, Congo and whatever, Tanzania, are growing. From a result point of view, you see, I think that's a very good result for Africa. Our result is up by 20 million euro, even when the market was very negative in Egypt and Turkey, where our results are significantly down versus last year. Good performance in our other African countries has more than compensated the result weakness in Turkey and Egypt. You see also in cement that the margin is clearly up. That has to do with a good market in Togo, and also our new kiln line in Congo clearly contributes now to a very positive result development. On group services trading, what you see is the result this quarter is zero. Why? We have taken a cautionary position on a doubtful receivable from a trading business, which has cost us about 7 million euro. If you look to the normal activity, what we see that the trading activity overall is going down. If we look to clinker, then we see that clinker prices in the Mediterranean, due to the overcapacity and weak market in Turkey, are coming down below $30 per ton. Whereas at the same time, the clinker price ex-Shanghai, or Shanghai goes clearly up because China is importing this year about 14 million-15 million tons. That's why clinker in Asia is short and clinker prices in Asia are up, whereas in Europe they are under significant pressure. chart 19 sums it up. We stick to our guidance. We have increased our saving targets for SG&A to 130 million euro. We have already achieved our 100 million euro, and strong cash flow is very strong, and that's why the net debt guidance has been reduced to 7.4 billion. That means we will clearly reach our 7 billion target, which we announced in the last Capital Market Day ahead of schedule. With that, I hand over to Dr. Näger for the financial report.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Scheifele. Good morning from my side to all participants. I will lead you through the financial messages, and we will start on slide number 21. If we look to our group share of profit, if we adjust it for the additional ordinary result, we are in line with a prior year. So, we'll reach 827 million euro as of end of September. We have below the operating result some accounting effects which weigh on the result. In the additional ordinary result, this is foreign exchange rate loss from the sale of the Ukraine business is 140 million euro. These are exchange rate losses during our operation of the Ukrainian business between 2005 and 2019. And this can only be deconsolidated when the whole business is deconsolidated, and that now came into our accounts. The financial result is hit by decrease of discount rates for provisions, and secondly, which makes about 20 million, and the reclassification of the interest portion of the lease under IFRS 16. This makes another 23 million. This explains the increase of our net financial result, of our net financial expense by roughly 40 million. The pure interest payment, as you know, they went down by roughly 30 million due to the reduction in the interest rates of our new bonds and the maturity of our expensive old bonds. Yeah. Tax expense increased to 340 million euro in the first 9 months, which is up roughly 80 million. This is primarily due to a higher tax base in the current year and the release of a tax provision in the previous year. So that makes around 80%. We maintain our guidance towards the tax rate by end of the year of 25%. Now, if we look to the cash flow, we see a significant deleveraging. The free cash flow increased significantly to 1.7 billion euro. The net debt, on the other hand, reduced by 1.1 billion, which is a great achievement. Based on this strong free cash flow, a high cash conversion rate, and a very strict CapEx discipline, especially in the area of growth CapEx, that contributed to a very favorable development of our net debt position. Our portfolio optimization continues. We have done another 103 million in the third quarter, and we are well underway to reach our target of 1.5 billion over the 3 years 2018, 19, and 20. Based on this favorable development, we have taken down our net debt target from 7.7 to 7.4 billion by end of this year, and the figure is before IFRS 16. So on slide 22, you can see the income statement. If we start below results from current operation, you see additional ordinary result turns from a positive 94 to a negative 74. I explained it. This is the Ukraine FX effect. Financial result 289 coming from 244, predominantly accounting effects and income taxes, higher tax base, and a release of provision previous year coming from the U.S. American tax reform. This brings us group to a group share of profit of 752 compared to 915 previous year, adjusted for additional ordinary result at 827 compared to 821, an increase of 1%. If you look to the cash flow statement on slide 23, you can see that we have two main areas of improvement. This is the operating cash flow, which is up roughly 400 million. This benefits by roughly 200 million by IFRS 16. So this has, because we do not show in 2019 the lease payments as part of the operating cash flow, but it's now in the financial cash flow. So that has a certain contribution, but even if we take that out, we have a very, very favorable development here. Cash conversion rate has really increased. Second main element is strict CapEx discipline. We spent 762 million total cash investment compared to 1.2 million in the same period of the previous year. You remember that previous year included two major acquisitions, which was Cementir Italy and Alex Fraser Asphalt and Aggregates Recycling business in Australia. So that drives the development in the cash flow. Slide 24 then reviews the portfolio optimization. We have now reached 961 from our target of 1.5 billion. We are down 21 months from the 36, so we are well underway, and we are very confident to achieve our target of 1.5 billion divestment. Just for your memories, I would like to remind you that almost all of this divestment have no impact on the EBITDA or the operating result because it's predominantly assets which are not required to do our core business. So I think my computer gives me one. Sorry, I have a problem with my computer. Thanks. Okay, then we can move to slide 25. On slide 25, you can see the net debt bridge. You can see on the horizontal green line the development of our free cash flow. This is operating cash flow minus stay-in-business CapEx. This goes drastically up, 1.65 billion coming from 1.1 billion. And you, as I said earlier, the IFRS 16 effect in that is roughly 200 million. So still taking that out, we still have a very nice improvement of our free cash flow. On the gross CapEx, we have spent very small amounts, very disciplined approach here. Our disposals in the first and the last 12 months exceed our gross CapEx spend. So we have a possible balance of 62 million, and this allows us to pay down 1.1 billion euro in debt over the last 12 months. For dividends, we spent 417 million for Heidelberg Cement and 174 million to non-controlling interest shareholders of our subsidiaries. Slide 26 then shows you the net debt bridge. We started in the accounts at last year's in the third quarter, 9.518 billion. IFRS 16 adds 1.3 billion, a bit more than we initially expected. We thought it should be 1.1-1.2. The reason predominantly is that the interest rates have dropped and are now lower than we expected, and that increased the net present value of our leasing payments. So it came out at 1.3, bringing the total net debt like-for-like post IFRS 16 in September to 10,830. We have added in the last 12 months 120 million in new leasing contracts. We paid down the free cash flow 1,651, and we have dividends, net gross CapEx, and a small accounting item, which brings us now down to 9.8 billion. As we are here ahead, roughly 300 million ahead of our plan, and we do not believe that this would change until end of the year. This brings us to tighten the target for our net debt position by end of the year to 8.6 that you can see on slide 27. And our midterm target, which we announced in the last capital market day two years ago, 7 billion net debt pre-IFRS 16 translates into 8.2 post IFRS 16. And we are very confident that we will complete our journey to reduce debt and solid leverage ratio earlier than initially expected, as you can see. This slide 28 then shows you the balance sheet. I mean, that's more for reporting purpose. So fixed assets go up by 2.1 billion. This includes the 1.3 billion IFRS 16 right-of-use assets. That's the main driver. The remaining 700 million are predominantly exchange rate changes. The euro has strengthened predominantly against the US dollar, and that is reflected in another 700 million of increase in fixed assets. That's it in substance from the financial part, and I would like to
hand over to Dr. Schaeffler. Thanks a lot. The outlook, we can keep very short. Outlook is unchanged. We stick to our targets. We have upgraded our net debt target. From a result point of view, we are okay with the consensus and think that we're going to reach also our result targets this year. Okay, that's it from my side, and I hand back to Mr. Bäumeburg in order to manage now the Q&A session. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dr. Neger, Dr. Schaeffler. Operator, you want to start the Q&A session, please?
No problem, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin a question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, you need to press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. And if you want to cancel your request, just press the hash key. Once again, please press star 1 for a question and hash key to cancel it. And so our first question comes from the line of Paul Roger from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody. So just two questions to start then, please. So the first one is on Western European volumes. You mentioned that you're basically exporting less due to CO2. Could you remind us how much you still export from Europe and whether those exports that you're still doing, whether they'll fall further? That's the first question. The second question is more specifically actually on CO2. If we look at slide 10, you very helpfully provided a emissions reduction bridge. That bridge doesn't seem to include things like new products such as green cements or carbon capture. Could either of those help you cut emissions further, or is their potential quite limited?
Okay, Mr. Osho, hello. Thanks a lot. As a general policy, we have stopped exporting from Europe because the CO2 price is too high, and our two export plants was mainly the hub in Malaga or in the south. And then from the Nordics, you know that typically traditionally Skansen, they have always supplied North America for us, our Brooklyn terminal in New York and also in Florida. And we have stopped these exports, and we have switched them to our Turkish operation in Çanakkale. So at the moment, no exports from Europe. And for total Europe, if you take, you know that's different from our competitors. We have Western Southern Europe, that's Spain, 300,000 tons, and in the Nordics, it's 200,000 tons from Norway and Sweden. So Europe in total is about down 500,000 tons. That's the message. And the second one on CO2, you're right. The picture on chart 10 shows you only the messages that within the next trading, the message is that short-term Heidelberg has not a problem. Second message is we think we can manage the next trading scheme and this period until 2030 with a clear target to come more or less to a zero position as far as purchase of allocation, additional allocations is concerned. And you have to bear in mind that the numbers which are flying around, there was also a report out last week or yesterday from UBS, this assumes always that the economy in Europe continues like it is. If there is a recession, the position on CO2 allocations for the industry and also for Heidelberg would again obviously improve because we are long in quite a lot of countries which we acquired from Italcementi because there the recession was very deep and they have not recovered yet, like Italy or like Spain, partially also Eastern Europe where we have allocated, whereas in the Nordic countries where the economy is already back, like in Germany or now Poland or Nordics, we are short. Overall, we are long. And now the question is, beyond 2030, what can we do in order to reduce CO2 emissions further? And here we have clearly set out in public that we as Heidelberg, we have the vision of a carbon-free concrete by 2050, and we are working on mainly on two areas. The one area is called carbon capture storage. That means we separate and capture the CO2 which is created in the process of cement production, and then we can either reuse the CO2, for example, in order to press oil out of oil fields. That's a project which we do in Edmonton. And the other one is the famous Northern Light project in Brevik, where we are with our cement plant Brevik together with Statoil and ArcelorMittal, where we want to set up an amine project, and where we're going to capture 50% of the CO2 emissions of our Brevik plant, which is about 400,000 tons. Yeah? That's the carbon capture exercise. And for we are running also two projects in Germany, one in Lengfurt in our plant together with Linde, where we do a carbon capture trial project with the target to capture about 70,000 tons. And then we have a different technology, which is oxyfuel, where we have set up a joint venture together with Schwenk, Wicca and Butzi in order to test that technology. And the other area where we are working is by using in future more CO2-free raw material in the production process. And that has to do with recycling, meaning we want to recycle concrete. And if you recycle concrete, you get gravel, stone, you get sand. And if you recycle very fine, you have as a third product, you have what we called concrete paste. That's a mixture of cement, obviously, chemicals, and some very fine sand. And this concrete paste is chemically only CaO, without CO2. We can use this material, we can use in the kiln again instead of limestone. And then in the process itself, there would be no CO2 created anymore. Yeah? And we are working also on this recycling piece. So long term, we think we can produce concrete in a carbon neutral way. That's the clear message. Yeah, that's on CO2. That was a bit long, but I think it's important to understand between the trading scheme and what we are doing on research beyond in order to realize the vision of a carbon-free concrete. Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely. Great, thank you.
We get another question, comes from the line of Seven Edelford from Auto BHF. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hello, thank you for taking my question. The first one is on Europe. I would like to better understand the cost dynamic between North and South. Looking at cement volume, it seems that the cost inflation has been lower in South than it has been in the North. So is it a fair assessment? Is it linked to a price, mix effect, or to the export volume? And especially, I think you closed down a plant in Sweden. Has there been any cost that you might have incurred? And the second one is on Indonesia. The local press has been reporting a fire at your Citirep plant early October. Can you confirm this is only linked to conveyor and therefore your production has not been impacted?
Yeah, okay. So on Indonesia, I was there with Dr. Van Achten on our trip around the world end of October. There was a fire on our conveyor belt from the quarry to our plant, but we settled this issue immediately. I think we did not stop production. We could handle that in a relatively within 1 or 2 days. That was not a problem. In the Nordics, you talk about the cost structure. You are right. In the we have booked all Degerham closure costs already in the first 9 months, and that effect will help us now in Q4, so the cost base will come down. I think we had an additional burden of Degerham closure costs between 8 to 10 million, which we had already, which we have booked already, because Degerham closure was, I think, in April, and that will phase out now over the in the next quarter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Tobias Winner from Maine First. So please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the questions. Two questions, if I may. Number one, you kindly show this year in your presentation in the Q3 bridge, EBITDA bridge, the breakdown between costs and other, minus 70 and minus 76, respectively. Probably a question for Dr. Neger. Could you kindly also break that down for the previous year, Q3? The last year, you put them together into minus 165 just to see the respective impacts, how they diverge. That's number one. Number two, please, with regard to Canada, Western Canada, just remind us California, remind us of their respective exposures or percentage profits contribution in North America and what you expect from those two regions going forward into 2020, please.
Mr. Werner, hello. On Canada and California, just to give you an idea, our Canadian result per September on LCO level in euro terms is about down to close to 28 million. Yeah, that's quite significant. And also, Western region is down around 12, 13 million euro. Yeah, and that has been compensated by better performance in the region north and okay in the region south. Yeah, that shows you a little bit that our NUM result is significantly impacted by Canada and by our exposure in California. And if you compare our numbers to our competitors, which we obviously also do, you have to look a bit at the footprint. We have a little bit of a unique position with three cement plants in California where others are not present. Yeah, and our Western Canadian position is also very significant. And what's the way forward? California, I personally was disappointed. Everybody who knows the North American market, it was clear that residential in California are under pressure. Housing starts are on a clear downward trend, but I would have expected that the infrastructure program of the state of California would have a much bigger impact, but that rollout came a little bit slower than expected. For Western Canada, I would expect that also next year the market in the Prairie provinces, Saskatchewan, will not really turn positive. I would expect that to stay sluggish. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Werner, I have checked it, but we don't have the split here with us of the previous year figure. I would guess that the split is, but that's really a guess, is completely different. Because last year we faced a strong energy cost inflation, especially in Q3. But I really have to check it and we'll come back on you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Arnold Lehmann from Bank of America. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good morning, gentlemen. I have three questions, if I may. The first one is on your debt target. As you said, you targeted 7 billion euros of net debt a couple of years ago. On the other hand, you know, since in the last couple of years, you could argue the macro risk have gone up, the trade wars, the Brexit situation, etc., and maybe in the meantime, your EBITDA didn't grow as much as you hoped 2 years ago. So are you happy with this 7 billion target, or would you consider pushing it a little bit lower? That's my first question. My second question is just a follow-up on CO2. You mentioned that you expected potential capacity closures from some of the smaller competitors. Maybe can you be a bit more specific about in which countries you expect that to happen, maybe Italy, Spain, or Germany? And on your side, would you also consider closing capacity or just not produce if the cost of CO2 goes up too much? That's my second question. And lastly, could you give us a feel for your pricing outlook for 2020, especially for Europe? I guess we are seeing, as you mentioned, more stable trend on the cost side. CO2 prices have been more or less stable in the last month. So is that good enough to support further price increase in Europe next year? Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Lehmann, now to talk about pricing next year is a little bit early for two reasons. First of all, we haven't had our budget meetings yet, and secondly, I could put out now a very steep number and look to my colleague, Mr. van Acht, and say, "Hey, now you just deliver." But we do not work that way in Heidelberg. What I would say on Europe, what you see, what is very positive, and you see that clearly in our numbers, that price trend in Europe this year was really good. If you look now per quarter, for example, yeah, prices in Germany are up close to 5%, BeNe more than 5%. Even France, which has seen downward trends in cement prices over the last years, is up by more than 4%, yeah. Italy is up close to 10%. Even U.K. in a difficult market is up. So pricing was clearly strong. In Poland, we are up 15%. We are up in Romania 8%, Czech Republic 8%. So we had a very strong pricing momentum, and I do not see that we will change this push and strategy in our budget meetings. Our message is clear. CO2 prices probably will go up, and cement prices have to stay ahead of the game, and that's why we will continue to push. So I personally would expect, and I just looked to Dr. van Acht, he nods also, we would expect the positive pricing trend in Europe clearly to continue. Heidelberg will work very hard in that respect, and we have again set up special training sessions in Europe for our total sales force in order to make sure that we get a very good execution. On the reduction rationalization of the cement plants, Heidelberg has closed already its small plant in Degerhamn, and we are about to close then. We want to close the Kunda plant in Estonia. That's still a wet plant, which helps us a lot on CO2 emissions. And then we have done a little bit our job, and we obviously have still a little bit restructuring to be done in Italy. We will have a look closer to central Italy, and then France is for us also an issue because in France we have still three plants with a relatively old production technology. We are working on that, and I would expect that smaller independents will also follow. And if you ask for countries where I would see consolidation or closures, it's especially Italy, but it's also Spain is under heavy pressure. These are the two countries which I think where you will see movement. And on the debt target, 7 billion, we feel very happy with that because that's the target which we had explained at our capital market data in Bergamo, yeah. And I think we are on our way, and the 7 billion is of a company of the size of Heidelberg, I think is a very good number, and that would lead us then also down to a net debt EBITDA of what we said around 2% plus minus 0.2, you know what I mean? And that is a leverage where we think we can comfortably live with. If we look to our country portfolio, which is more on the mature market side, we are less exposed to emerging market risk and on the product portfolio where we have with aggregates a very stable and price resilient business. And that's why with such a leverage, I think we feel very confident.
And we think the rating agencies also feel comfortable with that level of debt. So we think that's the right level of debt.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Another question comes from the line of Gregor Kuglitsch from UBS. I'm sorry. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. I've got a few questions. Can you just remind us sort of what changed in the cash, and maybe if you could just update your kind of all-in CapEx guidance, because I guess from where I'm sitting, that's probably the biggest difference. And perhaps a point of detail, I think you've done two deals in the second half. I think one is in the U.S., and then the other one is in Morocco. Are these in the numbers this year, or do they fall into next year? It's a little bit of a detail point. And then just coming back on CO2, so can you just confirm how you think about it in terms of the shortfall that you estimate you would have everything else equal by, say, 2022 on a spot basis, and what kind of reduction that implies? Is it around 15%, 15-20% of European carbon emissions per ton that you need to reduce by? And in that regard, can you also just update us on your latest thinking on import rules into the EU, if you have any? Thanks.
Okay, so Mr. Kuglitsch, we are not doing any deals in Morocco. In Morocco, we reduced our stake in our public listed company in the Q1. We bought Ocean. Yeah, we made an investment in Ocean. We were in the south, close to Lyon. You are really following the market. That's a little bit the lost place, I tell you. I've been there. That deal is supposed to be executed in December, and it's in Morocco you never know whether it happens in December or in January. So, but normally that's in our plan that it would come into December. Whereas the other transaction with Elementia, that's the cement plant in the Lehigh Valley, that's the $150 acquisition that will come in Q1 or maybe even Q2, depending on the Federal Trade Commission decision. Yeah, and but that's within our guidance. So, and then on CO2, I'm a simple man. I can tell you only the following. We have calculated, and that's always the assumption. I told it earlier, and that's also in your report. That's obviously which you wrote. The assumption, the numbers I give you now is the assumption that there is no cyclical economy anymore, that meaning Europe runs economically on the same speed as it does at the moment. Whether that's the case, let's wait and see. So if there's a recession, the whole thing obviously looks again different and more positively for the industry. As we said, we're going to be covered until 2022. And then without management action, our deficit, our yearly deficit would go up over the years to maybe 3.5 million tons. Yeah. And we have set up now an action plan on plant level, where we think we will reduce emissions by about 2.5. And if I add then my carbon capture storage in Brevik with about 400,000 tons, then you see we can reduce by about 3 million tons. So our target is then for the management target is to get to come into the in the next trading period also to a position where we do not have to buy additional CO2 allocations. And the three main levels are alternative fuel, and the second one is a reduction of the clinker factor, and the third one, as I explained earlier a little bit to Mr. Roger, is the use of carbon-free raw material. And just to say that we are not only talking about that, that in Germany we have just modernized our two biggest plants in Bavaria, in Burglengenfeld and in Schelklingen. And in these two plants, we go from an alternative fuel rate of 40%, we go now up to 80% or even 90%. And that is a significant emission reduction, what we can do. Okay?
And the import rules, please? Any comments?
Import rules. That's very difficult. The new commissioner, Ms. von der Leyen, is not in yet. I think this is like looking in your coffee cup and expecting what's the weather tomorrow. I think that's very unclear at the moment. We would expect, finally, we expect that the European Commission is very open to CO2 border adjustment. That's very clear. They have understood that if they allow non-CO2countries, non-CO2 trading countries to import into Europe and we have to carry the heavy CO2 price, that is not fair competition. They have understood. And that's why I would expect on the long run that there will be a CO2 border adjustment. Ms. von der Leyen is clearly open to that. And as you know, the French, for example, are also rather protective. So Germany and France are politically clearly in favor of border protection on CO2. Also, the German Greens, by the way, are in favor.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Gentlemen, we have quite a number of questioners on the line, so can I please ask you to limit your questions to one at a time, please?
We speed up the answers.
We get another question, comes from the line of Arnold Pinatel from On Field Investment. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hello gentlemen, it's Arnaud Pinatel from On Field Research. As I'm just restrained to one question, I will ask the other ones, I hope, tonight. But just on Canada, can you share with us a little bit the pricing outlook for Canada? Because you are clear on the fact that CO2 prices are and regulation are driving the pricing for cement in Europe. Is it happening also in Canada at the moment when the Canadian government has also implemented an ETS? And could you share with us a little bit more flavor on what was the pricing trends in Q3 in Canada and in the US?
Yeah, Mr. Pinatel, hello. Yeah, as in Canada, we have to be very clear. We come in more details. In Western Canada, we have two different markets which are very different. We are very strong in the Vancouver, BC market. Yeah? And Vancouver and BC are still running very strongly. No problem. The problem is in the Prairie provinces, these oil sand businesses, etc. That's what where the market is weak. That means Alberta, Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, Regina, and also Winnipeg. That's what we call the Prairie provinces. This is a raw material, a resource-driven business which has suffered a lot under Mr. Trudeau, and they are at the moment under pressure. And pricing overall in Canada has been stable. We have only been impacted by lower volumes. Just to be precise for you, for example, our supplies to the oil patch industry this year are about 180,000 tons down versus last year. Normally, in a normal year, we supply about 350,000 tons to the oil patch. This year, this is down to 120, and that is a very high margin. Contribution margin there is maybe $60, $70, $80 per ton. So that has a clear impact on the result. I'll just give you an idea. Pricing is not down. Pricing in Canada overall is about $4, $4.50 up. It's about $182 Canadian dollar. So it's not a price pressure. It's a volume. It's a clear volume impact. Yeah. Okay.
But you don't see the CO2 cost in Canada driving the pricing in the coming years.
Yeah, I see that. Canada has a very similar regulation as in Europe. They have CO2 tax, especially also in carbon, which drives electricity up, etc. And that has obviously an impact on the market and on the pricing. I see Canada, to be clear, Canada, the Western Canadian are now at the moment in a downturn, but this is still highly profitable and cash generative business. So I would say we complain on a relatively high level, but it disturbs a little bit our numbers because in Canada our numbers are clearly down and they have a clear impact on the total North American result. Okay?
Okay. And the utilization rate in the US, just to get an idea of, you mentioned you have to supply your growth partly with imports. Yep. From your integrated plants, as an average, you are already very high, I suspect.
We can discuss that tonight. I would say we are around 80%. Depends a little bit. Look, we still have some capacity left in the Midwest and in our plant close to Toronto, whereas in the south, in Leeds, we are sold out, and that's why, due to the growing market in Florida and Alabama, we had increased imports, and you know what I mean? That's why the revenue in our North American business is fine, you know what I mean? But the mix change, We have good volumes in Florida and whatever, but the margin is very low, and the volumes were low in the oil patch, which has a very high margin, and that explains a little bit the difference between sales development and result development. That's the message.
Very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We get another question. Comes from the line of John Fraser Andrew from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question is North America and this issue you're having in California. Can you talk about the infrastructure there? You also mention in your presentation You've got a good order book. You're expecting catch-up of delayed projects in Q4. And so also in Q4 in North America, where are you with quarry sales? You've indicated that's going to reverse in Q4. We know that Carroll Canyon was the big profit in Q4 2017. So where are we 2018, 2019, Q4 on quarry sales, please?
Oh, Mr. Fraser, Carroll Canyon, that's a long time ago. That's now two or three years. That is really industry history. Dr. Näger just told me that's industry history. No, you know that we have always a program where we sell our exhausted quarries, and that has to do then also with permitting, yeah, with zoning regulation. That's always a little bit difficult to predict. And that's why we have a significant, let's say, excess land still in the Washington and also in the Oregon area. So we talk about Seattle and Portland, yeah. And we have one transaction we are working at the moment, which is close to Redmond. Redmond, that's where the Microsoft headquarters is. So it's a valuable piece, but there was some delay. And for us, always the price is important and not that we hit your expectation on land sales on a quarterly basis. So that's why that will come, whether we think it will come in Q4, but it could also be that it comes then next year, yeah. And on California, obviously, the fire there in October now is also not helpful. You saw the fire was again very strong in California. We're going to be in California next week and talk to our people. What we see is we see order book, especially in asphalt aggregates, is better. And what we also, what was market weakness for us, also what was weak in the Western Province was for us also the Seattle market, yeah. In Seattle, we had clearly a delay in projects. We have very big work. We have a big job in the new Microsoft campus. That's a multi-billion-dollar project in Redmond, Seattle, yeah, where we are the prime supplier. But there was a delay in that project. But what I understood from our management talking to them in October, now volumes are clearly increasing, yeah. It's not that the work is not there. It's more a timing issue. So if the weather is okay, we should have a strong finish in that respect. Okay. Thank you.
Just a quickie. Yeah, just a quickie. The Q4 2018 quarry sale profits in the region were what, please?
I don't know. We're going to tell you tonight. I don't know. I don't know by heart.
18?
18. 18 for total. For total group was about 75 million euro.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We got time for two more questions, please.
Another question comes from the line of John Messenger from Redburn Europe. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there. Maybe just on that last comment, mate, can I just confirm that 75 was in the fourth quarter? Because it seems a surprisingly large number, just so we're all clear in that I think.
Yep.
I thought it was.
Answer is yes. Answer is yes. Question. Q4. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. In terms of just Middle East Africa, obviously, when we think about year-to-date or for the quarter, could you just give us a, obviously, you mentioned Egypt is a negative EBITDA producer or was. Can we just have an idea of how that has evolved in the third quarter? And what is your kind of prognosis for both Egypt and for Turkey, thinking of next year for the MEA region, please?
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Messenger, I think I mentioned it. I think we can be really proud of our result in Africa in Q3. And if you look also for the full year, we are just a couple of millions below last year. And that shows you, even with the two very bad markets in Egypt and Turkey, we can compensate by better results in other African countries. And just to be very clear, our Egyptian result on LCO level is down versus last year, 30 million. That's a lot of money. And Turkey is also down close to 9 or 10 million. And these 40 million for the first nine months, we have more or less compensated by better results in Morocco, better results in Tanzania, Ghana, Togo, etc. That shows you that our portfolio is quite balanced, that we can compensate even big problems in a big market by good performance in other markets. The outlook for Egypt is for the Q4 better for two reasons. First of all, we have dramatically cut the cost structure in Egypt again. We have totally closed the famous Torah plant. Yeah. Torah plant was set up by Holcim, by the grandfather of Thomas Schmidheiny. That's a very old traditional plant. We have closed it down totally. We have also closed one line in our Suez plant close to the Red Sea, and we have already laid off 750 full-time employees again in Egypt. Since Heidelberg took over Italcementi, we have laid off in Egypt 3,500 people. So that's what we do. And that's why the cost base is significantly down. And what we see now in October, that the market came back quite. The market was until September negative -6%, -7%. In October, volumes are very strong. And we have also led a price increase in Egypt in October by about 15%, which seems to stick. So let's wait and see. But at the moment, the actual trend is our friend, let's put it that way. And that's it. Okay?
And could I just, sorry, have all the write-offs for Torah, has that all been taken, or will that hit in the fourth quarter?
Yes, that was all. That's all in our cost base, obviously. Yes, of course. That's why for next year, our result improvement for Egypt will be significant, yeah, with the target to be RCO break-even because we have a cost saving, volumes and pricings unchanged of about 15 million euro on an annual basis, 15 million euro. That's a lot.
Thank you.
So we have taken the pain this year. Okay? Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Last question, please.
Okay. Last question comes from the line of Rajesh Patki from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Just one question then. It would be on Indonesia. Results very strong in Q3. Do you see room for further improvement in pricing in the market? And also, volumes were a bit soft in the third quarter. Are you already seeing a pickup in this quarter?
Yeah. As Indonesia, I have to say our market assessment for the full year was too positive. If you recall, we said due to election, first year flat, first half year flat, and then we said second half, we said we would expect the run of about 8%, and then we would say 4% for the full year. That did not realize because per September, you can check with Ozan Kacar, I think the total Indonesian market, according to published figures, was down 2.8%, was still negative or even more. So October was again, na kum si kum sa, but not. October was better for us, especially as we are in October more or less on last year's volume. But it's not, you know what I mean? It's not the big boom. The problem is that the commercial part is still relatively weak, or they wait a little bit hard for the new government. You know that all the ministers haven't been appointed yet, and the administration is not still settled in. And that's why also infrastructure at the moment is relatively slow. For next year, we would expect Indonesia maybe to grow again 4%-5%. On the pricing side, that needs to be watched on the market. What we see now, pricing is up 10%. We have been not very pushy on price increases in bag cement for some strategic reasons. And we will see next year the market will be busy because Semen Gresik is switching from the Holcim brand to their own brand. That will create some trends in the market. So we will see.
So are you happy with the current level of margins in Indonesia?
Not fully yet. We gave a guidance that we want to go back in cement to an EBITDA margin of 25%. And if you look to our numbers in Indonesia, I tell you by heart, we are at the moment at 23 point something. So there is still a little bit upside. In the worst case, we were down to 19%. We have significantly improved the margin this year by 4 or 5 percentage points.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking. And sorry to cut the rest of the questioners off, but we have time, I guess, tonight at the analyst dinner. We will also be on the road today in London, tomorrow in Dublin, next week in the U.S.
Great.
Then thereafter, we're going to attend the Bank of America Merrill Lynch conference in December. So there's ample room for meetings with us. Thanks for joining in today, and speak to you all later. Thank you very much.
This concludes our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now all disconnect.